By these processes or another true process, one must control the contaminated, unbridled mind, which is always attracted by material enjoyment, and thus fix himself in thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay. And then Prabhupada's purport. There are 44 verses in this chapter, and just looking at them kind of, they've been divided in very natural sections. The first one is this whole process about the yoga, breathing, following your varna ashram dharma, these kind of things. And then you're supposed to get to a certain point where you're supposed to come to dhyana or meditation. And then it's giving object of meditation. So 13 through 17 describes what the Lord looks like, his face, his feet, his hands, his smile. Very nice, very complete, very beautiful yoga. And 21 through 33 is then meditate on that form, how to do it, how to meditate on the feet, how to rise, how to do this, how to do that. Very clear instructions. And then finally the result, you see dhyana fall, the fruit of actually all this meditation, what happens like that. So a very complete chapter, describing Hatha Yoga, Astanga Yoga, Bhakti, Patanjali Yoga, like that. And of course, Prabhupada making it very clear. And then the purports also, Vaikuntha Lila Katha, is very clear. So Prabhupada says, Etair Anyaish Cha. I think the danger here is that, of course, what it would say, well, I have my yoga. I have my yoga. I do downward dog yoga. I do hot yoga. It's also available now. And so many kinds of yoga. I have the yoga of drink. I go to my bar. My bar is called the ashram. Yeah. That'd be a nice name for some. I guess in California you could have that. The ashram. Ashram. Yeah. I have a bar. Okay. So, but then Prabhupada's making this point. Prabhupada says in the purport, of course, in the text, he says any other true process of yoga here. Writing maybe for 10,000 years, Etair Anyaish Cha, the general yoga process entails observing the rules and regulations, and of course is yama, niyama, practicing the different sitting postures, asana, concentrating the mind on the vital circulation of the air, okay, pranayama, and then thinking of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his Vaikuntha pastimes. So then Prabhupada's summarizing dharana, samadhi. Okay, yeah. So on the right we have some of the different yoga postures there. It's very interesting. Yeah. And the whole point, it was actually one devotee in Argentina. That's his name, Vishnu Chakravardidas. And he's just naturally a yogi. He lives that way. He, is kind of tall and very kind of friendly and has a beard, nice beard, his hair. So he and his wife have, I forget what it's called, not called a yoga studio, but it's something like that. It's like natural living, so and so. And they have some other things too, a combined integral thing with yoga and Ayurveda and stuff. And it's popular, And then he also goes and does programs at different yoga institutes. And when we go there, we went there, he actually called a lot of leaders of other yoga institutes and stuff, and they all came. It was very interesting. We were able to talk to them very nicely, and they were appreciating what we're saying and about the goal of yoga, higher perspective, and everything else. And also they could see that we had, a real, very serious understanding about the yoga process, and we understood how it's necessary to accomplish these things. So he's talking about it. For example, maybe you mentioned this before, is the most fundamental source of all this yoga knowledge is Patanjali Yoga Sutras. And even if somebody is a modern accomplished acharya and different non-ordinary experiences, exceptional experiences, even still, probably very much there, accepting Patanjali and so on. So he says, right in the very beginning, when they're going through yama and niyama, it says something like Ishwara Pranipat, the Shinghama Dim Saranam Prapajay. So it says in the very beginning that if you, these rules and regulations, if you don't worship the Ishvara, they're not very valuable. And if you worship the Ishvara, then you don't have to worry about them too much. So right in the very beginning, it says Ishvara Pranipat. Then the Radhika was telling me that there was a, American Association, AAAS, American Association for Religion, and the Society for Biblical Literature. They combine their thing and have big programs, you know, with 1,000 people or something coming, like, you know, in different big, they call it convention halls, and it's in Chicago, San Francisco, American Association of Religions and Society for Biblical Literature. So one of their sessions is, of course, on the Hindu-Christian dialogue, everything else. So he said one time he was the chairman for that, and maybe something like 20 people were there. And of course, these are all big scholars, everything else. And Garuda was there. And so one person was saying that there's no mention of any kind of idea of a person, supreme person, in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. And Garuda was responding, you know, Professor Graham Schweib, I remember there's something there. He says, no, there's nothing there, you know. But there was a guy from Oxford there. And he said, no, Dr. Schweig is correct. And he quoted the Sanskrit for two or three different places, and the other fellow's, you know, tail came down between his leg, like that stuff. He said, if you don't tussle with a Sanskritist from Oxford. So anyway, it's there. And if you don't want to turn your back on it, then right from the very beginning, there's this perspective of an Ishvara, a controller, omnipresent person, and so on. You know, and then the process, okay, Prabhupada's saying it's a bona fide process, but he also says for every single process in the Ashtanga Yoga system, there's a process in the Bhakti Yoga system. Of course, the Yama and Niyama we have right there. You know, our Yama is the four principles, and our Niyama is chant 16 rounds a day. And after that, there's so many, you know, details about things, you know, no onion, no garlic, you know, don't joke too much with the opposite sex, if you're not married to them, whatever, even if you are married, keep some kind of, you know, for sobriety. And doing different things, getting up in Mangalartik in the morning and support the Sankirtan movement. So they do some different rules and regulations, do's and don'ts. And then we have, sitting postures, pranayama. And, of course, these are accomplished then. You know, we sit properly when we chant japa. And we'll see ahead later on when the pranayama and the verses coming, probably we'll talk about, you know, blowing all the air out and holding it out and then breathing in deeply and hold it in. That's about the extent of Prabhupada's pranayama, you know, in terms of any kind of specific technique. Just, you know, we take a deep breath and chant nicely, you know. But other than that, the point is if you engage in these things, if you are chanting, if you are dancing, if you are playing kartals, if you're playing a drum, then automatically the prana is going to start being agitated. You can't dance, dance without having some kind of reaction to your prana. Yeah. And then, of course, if you're doing it with some idea, Brahmandi Brahmatikom Bhagyavan Jeev, if you've got some idea from the very beginning of, you know, the goal, you know, some lighthouse where you're trying to reach that place, then you can chant. You can chant from the heart with an open throat. I read that one place. Chant from the heart with an open throat. And it's very natural. You start a little bit of the sound of somebody actually crying out to Krishna sincerely, Prabhupada, other devotees, and it stimulates you, Vibhava. And when you hear yourself crying out sincerely, then that stimulates you, the Vibhava, the reaction, which in this case would be Anubhava, the reaction of chanting, you know, with some sincerity actually becomes a Vibhava and stimulates you to chant more. Because hearing it, you feel, that's not exactly what I want to express. And so you try and chant a little bit different mode. And then, of course, the drums and the kartals and the chanting become a very natural ornament, to create a proper ambience, you know, for that feeling and everything else like that. If the chanting is slow, contemplative, then we're not like jumping up and down playing the kartals at 65 miles an hour, you know. See, they very naturally fall in line, you know. Then he was explaining, what's the other one, the dharana. And he gave a really good, you know, summary. It was like, normally we're being stimulated by the drum. You see this, people can't stop playing the drum. They can't put it down, driving everybody nuts, you know. Okay, yeah. So it's stimulating to us. It's stimulating to us. And but the opposite is a dharana. We take ourselves away from being stimulated by the atmosphere, and now if we have relationship to it, then we stimulate it. Now we consciously play the drum. Even though it may not be so, what's the word, pleasing, so sentimental, in its gross sense. We do it in the beginning, maybe more like dhyan, playing correctly, giving up some kind of strange beats which we're attracted to. But playing the proper beats, then we, after a while, we start to develop a very mature sentiment, a higher sentiment, and we realize this is a better sentiment. What I was doing before was very childish and mixed with all kinds of violence and stuff. You know? So the playing drums, chanting, you know, dancing automatically accomplishes the asana, pranayama, and then this was the environment, then we withdraw. And now I'm no longer just being controlled by the external aspect of the kirtan. I'm really trying to make the kirtan, you know, come from Vaikuntha, you know, so dharana. And then the steps of dhyana, which we call smaranam, you know, call smaranam, same thing as I understand, different levels and developments like that of remembering Krishna, contemplating Krishna. So Prabhupada is saying the general process of yoga entails observing rules and regulations, postures, focusing on the prana, and thinking of the pastime and his Vaikuntha pastime, the Lord and his Vaikuntha pastimes. This is the general yoga process. Okay? This same concentration can be achieved by other recommended processes, and therefore anyaisha, other methods, also can be applied. The essential point is that the mind, which is contaminated by material attraction, has to be bridled and concentrated on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So different processes and stuff. We see that. And take when we're in somebody else's place of worship, at the time of worship, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, we can realize that whatever I'm doing in my religion, it's being done here also, you know, that the same God I'm worshiping is being worshiped here. But so I can take things, I can see things, and I can take them to enhance my process. You know? So this is a very, very good process, going around and stealing things from different yoga ashrams, from different churches, and improving your religion. You know? And then he says, but because I'm engaged in a certain tradition, I won't be participating in the details of this ritual and so on. So again, the Catholic Church, that's exactly what their decision is on how to relate to other religions and so on. You know? So other bona fide processes, the Jesuits, for example, starting back from St. Francis Xavier, whoever it is, have a seven-step process or a four-day process or something. And the days can take longer than 4 days or something. And they go through different kinds of austerities and meditations. I'd be very interesting to look at it and see what it includes. And it's severely recommended not to do it without a guide. Very severely recommended not to do it without a guide. We're developing more and more close relationship with the Jesuits and nice interaction and stuff. You know, the world is so in such a turmoil that any kind of person who's decent is going to be looking for other people who are decent. Yeah. That's why I'm saying we're in a position now to run somebody for president of the United States. I'm not at all joking. Of course, all of our members would vote for him, and then all of our congregational members, probably, and then all Dharmic people would listen to it. And if we presented a general Dharmic program, just okay, they'd vote for us. But if it got out to the point where we actually could communicate our ideas and get them out there, then a lot of sane people would vote for us. My one suggestion was Anutama for president of the United States and Tulasi Garba, vice president. You know? But I don't know. It seems to me a lot of women would also like that. You know, a lot of women would figure, I know women. I don't want a woman for president of the United States. But yeah, vice president, okay, you can keep that guy in line. I think it was not impossible. Maybe we get 15% of the vote and end up with somebody being Secretary of the Interior. And then he could go ahead and add one more face to Mount Rushmore. One more face on Mount Rushmore. Okay. It cannot be fixed on something void, the mind, or impersonal. So here we have Shunyavad and Nirvishesh. For this reason, so-called yoga practices of voidism and impersonalism, you know, are not recommended in any standard yoga shastra. Is that fanaticism? Probably not. Again, devotees who actually investigate these things from a simple, direct fashion, they say, no, it's not. You know, our acharyas, they know all the yoga shastras. And so Prabhupada just takes what they say, and they show again and again, basically and fundamentally we see again and again, that focusing the mind on void or impersonal is not there in any shastra. On the right we have, of course, a Sri yantra. That's a kind of a, it's interesting because this yantra, they have a light in the middle, a kind of light, which is not actually part of the yantra. Yeah. I guess you're supposed to meditate on the light. I'm meditating on the light now. I'll be meditating on the light. I don't know what happens with these triangles. Sometimes, when you close your eyes and stuff, you get all these like geometric things popping across your eyes. So Euclidean geometry definitely does seem to have like a kind of like a fundamental aspect to it. Of course, we say the fundamental shape is Tribhangala, Krishna's shape like that, like an S. But beyond that, the other, Patanjali, the geometric shapes and the yantras, you can go back. I was even reading today on this. There's the many of the mandalas are squares like this and that. And then there's the Goloka yantra, which is a hexagram. It's described in Brahma Samhita like that. Usually with one triangle facing up, which I guess is the Purusha, and one triangle facing down or something like that, whatever it is. The other way around, which is Prakriti and Purush. And this is that form, the hexagon, apparently it goes all the way to Goloka. So there is validity in Euclidean geometry and seeing these things echoed and the way we organize the house, the way the vastu is organized and so on. So there's some validity in the impersonal meditation, but it's not the conclusion. And because we're Ananda Maya, we won't be satisfied with it. If it's a progressive step, okay. But on the other hand, Prabhupada says from the very beginning, patience is necessary. In the very beginning, when we're preaching, we have to expect that people are going to be patient and tolerate some mistakes. And then if they do that, they can go ahead and start to appreciate the real satisfaction of the soul with Ananda. So right in the middle of the Lakshmi Yantra, I guess we had Paramatma. The real yogi is a devotee because his mind is always concentrated on the pastimes of the Lord. Therefore, Krishna consciousness is the topmost yoga system. And here we have Krishna and Balaram fighting with Chanura and Mushtik. Chanura and Mushtik, Krishna's pastimes. Now, of course, also, it's a fact. Is it our whole, International Society for Krishna Consciousness is full of Krishna Leela and going out and distributing books and struggling to maintain temples and fighting with the demons to protect the innocent and cooking bhoga offerings for Radha and Krishna and making beautiful dresses for them and arranging beautiful parties for them. So this is all just Krishna Leela. So even if we're meditating on that, if we're contemplating, and we were building a little garden house. We did that in Berkeley one time, I think with Janmashtami, and Radha Gokulananda came down and they had a very beautiful little made out of lath, different sticks, and outside gazebo type thing, and then decorated with beautiful flowers, and then they were right down in the middle of everybody. It was such a nice experience to be able to be just a few feet away from them like that and so on. Very nice, So somebody, when he's doing construction work like that, He's parting part of Krishna Leela, and it's the idea of seeing the depth, the profundity in the whole thing. And that's the topmost yoga. Okay, thank you. That's kind of the whole presentation there. Does anybody have any comments about this? There's so many things, of course, that have been covered in the previous verses and everything else, you know, about yoga and everything else. So if anybody has any other comments right away.
Thank you, Maharaj. Can you kindly break down that word, nirvisesha? Shunyavadi refers to voidism and nirvisesha in personalism, if I'm correct. And I just was kind of thinking about the construction of that word. Okay.
I think vishesh means distinction. Like water is distinct from earth, from land. You know, that's what I understand. So nir means no. It means no distinction, like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Even the word impersonalism has to include the word person. You can't talk about what you're talking about, want to talk about, because there's nothing there. You know, those who talk do not know. Yeah. So voidism. Yeah. Voidism. Yeah. Devoid. Yeah.
Okay. But sometimes, if I'm correct, translates the word shunya. He uses the Indian pronunciation for zero. He says jiro. Shunya,
yeah,
jiro.
Yeah. Yeah. Jiro. Shunya ek do teen.
Ah.
Zero bot.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do something here. You know the spoken Sanskrit dot day, don't you?
I use it.
I think it's a really good site.
It's really good, yeah. Spoken Sanskrit.de, which is Deutschland.
Deutschland, yeah.
Yeah. Deutschland über alles, which the historian Pian Oak says comes from the word Deitja.
Wow.
And everything, when it's describing Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha, when they're born, they're walking down the street and the earth shakes and they're big and they block out the sun, you know. Well, I would organize sometimes in the Brajmunda Parikrama. I had me organize the Govardhan Puja play, which is really a challenge because you're trying to organize it while you're walking. You know? But if so many times would end up with all the Scandinavian devotees would be the gods and goddesses, you know, Indra and the devis and all this stuff would all be these blonde-haired, you know, people. And they're so big, their frames block out the sun. So it's very much like the kind of description of daichas. Okay, let's try near the shesha. I'm probably just going to be the wrong one here. Near the shesha. Let's try that. Okay. Without difference, not different from, without distinction. There we go. Yeah. So vishesha, it sounds like means, distinction.
Yeah, you got it right. Exactly right.
And there we go. Special vishesh means special variety. Yeah, queer. Attributed. Yeah. All these strange words. Yeah. You don't want to call somebody a butterfly in Spanish. But you know what you're talking about. Yeah. We don't want to say that, was it Madame Mohan? Is it really gay fellow? So I guess Sanskrit has this, probably Sanskrit is even more loaded with these double meanings than even the other languages. And I'm sure Vidagdha Madhava and Lalita Madhava, if you begin to know her, is full of a really funny, you know, funny uses of words and stuff. Language.
Maharaj, I have two quick questions. Easy
ones. Okay.
I'm not clear on the difference between Dharana and Dhyana. I've seen it simplistically explained that Dharana is like a focused meditation for a short period of time and the Dhyana is for extended periods of time. But I'm not sure if that's true. Do you know what that stage, the sixth and the seventh stage of the Ashtanga Yoga system are? What they really represent?
The spoken Sanskrit that day translates it as dharana as concentration, and dharana as wearing, and splitting, rending, tearing, cleaving, falling away, clearing, mending. So that's what I think. That's the point. It means to carry, to break, you know, like that, to pull away. So it, again, it's the same thing. It would amount to, because you get to pull away from something and go to something. So you're going away from being absorbed in the senses to being able to be on the subtle platform. So in that sense, yeah, it would also be, you know, temporary meditation, you know, withdrawal, you know, tearing, rending, splitting. That's, yeah, that's what I understand. Yeah, yeah.
I had
dhyana
a question.
Dhyana is when you're actually there, or smarana. Then again, there are different levels. There's continuous meditation. There's, and it becomes uninterrupted, where you have a daily schedule which always keeps you in Krishna consciousness. Okay, so you're always Krishna conscious. But then if there's a matter of continuous, then there's a matter of continuous and intense. Then there's a matter of continuous continuity, intensity, and breadth. So finally, when you are intensely and totally, universally Krishna conscious at every moment, then it says you can start to remember, you know, your eternal form. Like that.
Okay. Just a quick question. In chapter 6, I guess Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the one that we take his cue from how to name the chapters. So 6 is Dhyana Yoga. I was wondering why it's not just Ashtanga Yoga or something. Why Dhyana Yoga? Or not, why that's Samadhi Yoga or something? Why Dhyana?
I don't know. I guess you got to go meet Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I was in the Arctic, and nobody wanted to do it because, of course, you had to take a bath and go and take a bath, whatever you want. It was an interesting experience for some question time I did it. But one day we had pictures of Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta on the altar in front of Gaura-Nathai, and I was offering the incense to Prabhupada and everything else, and then he probably was kind of like smiling. This, you know, what is it? So my mind kind of reacted, well, Prabhupada, why are you smiling? You know, and could Prabhupada communicate it to me, I guess, in my hallucination? He said, oh, Bhaktisiddhanta has something to tell you. And I was wondering what was going to happen next. When I turned it off of the incense to Bhaktisiddhanta's picture, I was like, my God, what's going to happen now? You know, and he was kind of staring at me. And the intelligence communication was, I wanted to tell you, you're doing all right for an idiot Malachia like that. You just keep following your Prabhupada's. You know, okay, that was the kind of the communication. So yeah, I guess you can go ask Prabhupada if you can go with him to see Bhaktivinoda Thakur and ask the question why he chose that.
Anyone else have a question or comment?
I can show you a PowerPoint show we made up here. My Sankirtan, our preaching. I'm working with the Ministry of Education, and it's a whole thing, like, you know, trying to organize what happens is there's a lot of zonal programs. And of course, in India, like in the zonal acharya, like Gopal Krishna Maharaj or Bhakti Charu Swami or others, Jayabhoita Maharaj, there's so I think any one of those has more disciples, followers, members, property even, than all the rest of the, you know, centers outside of India combined. Any one of them is so heavy there, so prominent, so many things like that. And so they have, of course, a great facility, produced very developed extended education programs, some of which you may have heard about, different programs at the universities and congregational programs and getting accreditation and so on. See, we're trying to work on all this, you know, with the Ministry of Education. Now, one thing that's developed also is the GBC College. Have you heard about that? Nobody's heard about GBC College. Yeah. So they started that. In some ways, it should have come under the Ministry of Education, but maybe because it was a full mandate from the GBC, and they're running it now. And they're trying to train ISKCON leaders And that's where I'm trying to deal with it, because it has to make, I think, make a distinction. What they're talking about is administrative leaders. And so make it clear that training, you know, brahminical leaders, you know, teachers, sannyasis, this kind of stuff, is a different training, two like that. You have to get a diploma in education, or you can get a diploma in educational administration. So this is the PowerPoint show that we're doing. We're going to make, it's going to be organized in South America. It'll be in Brazil for 30 people maximum. And it will go on for 2 weeks in Campina Grande, which is a beautiful rural project there. And then they'll have 1 year of online programs and finish off with another one like that. And they're especially focusing on zonal supervisors. There used to be regional secretaries, but that's the eliminated title now. And that's basically GBC secretary, zonal supervisor, and then coming down into like temple presidents and stuff. You know? So we're trying to get some education, you know, from people. And so we're supposed to do three presentations. One is kind of general philosophical perspectives on education in GBC College. Another one we were going to do is just tell all of our own personal experiences in being and participating in management and administration in ISKCON. It's good for me, because I'm thinking I'm going to leave my body soon, so record all this and I'll feel satisfied. Okay, I was able to tell people what I learned and stuff. And the last one is in like very practical, like time management, communication skills, and all this kind of stuff, which I want to do as a, you know, share as a workshop with the people and stuff, because it's kind of very, very particular how you keep notes and how you do your time management and stuff. But it looks like 2 hours each, but it looks like it's going to be fun, you know, productive.
There's a course being offered this year in Mayapur, speaking of like GBC training, an ISKCON leadership and management course by Anuta Mahaprabhu.
Yeah.
And I'm actually going to sign up to take that course.
Yeah. I think that those two are very parallel, but his is maybe a little more broad. It's the whole thing a little more broad, you know, than this. Yeah. So maybe I'll show you what I've got here. Look at it. F5. There we go. GBC College, March 2008, Campina Grande, Brazil. Okay. Here we have somebody asking the question, what is the ultimate goal of education? Yeah. So we've developed a little philosophy here. And Prabhupada says, Yatahi Purushasyeha Vishnu Padash Parash Pranam. Every living entity has an intimate relationship with God, Srila Prabhupada says. Intimate relationship with God. That's incredible. Our eternal relationship with God can be revived in the human form of life. And that should be the goal of education. Indeed, that is the perfection of life and the perfection of education. Okay. Goodbye, our relationship. And the same thing from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, from the preface. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in order to bestow upon human society the benediction of the science of Krishna. The most exalted of all the activities of Lord Krishna, the most exalted of part of the science, are his pastimes of conjugal love with the gopis. Therefore, to understand the mission of Lord Chaitanya and follow in his footsteps, which help him, one must be very seriously following the footsteps of the six Goswamis. So it is very clear. You know, our mission is to become, you know, qualify ourselves, become educated, to be able to help Lord Chaitanya in the Sankirtan movement. So then we have kind of a summary, since we're trying to teach people what is prema. So here's a very, very nice verse, Adosho Adaha Sadhu Sangha Bhajana Kriya. So it's a very, very nice standard, very clear about what we're trying to accomplish and the different levels, you know, and asking ourselves what level we're on, everything else. So even if we're administrators, this is what we're trying to administer. We're trying to administer the development of prema on these different levels, you know. Okay, and then the heart of all this development, and even the goal, is Sankirtan. That's how we develop prema, and that's the whole manifestation, the pure manifestation. It's the goal and the means is prema Sankirtan. Yeah. We did this before one time, and Sesha was there. He was, of course, he's a minister of education. And after I made this presentation, he said, it was really a shock when Mars is making this. because for so many years we've been trying to develop our education. And one of the things is that all people who graduate from our schools haven't the slightest idea how to fit into the Sankirtan movement. So we really have to, you know, work on this. That our education is, if we get people come out of our schools and they don't know their position in the Sankirtan movement, but technicians, managers, you know, whatever, yeah, then they're going to be happy. And finally, this is all from Upadeshamrita, should be backed up with little training in Varnashram, some training in Varnashram. But the whole heart of the thing is Sankirtan, congregational chanting of the glories of the Lord, you know, based upon Srimad Bhagavatam Mahamantra. And the goal of that, of course, is to go through these levels and everybody is achieving prema. If we don't do that, of course, we're going to come back again, back to school. And, okay, then Varnashram is there to give a kind of a cup for the whole thing, a basis for the whole thing. So then we're taking here as our proposal is, the GBC College is for training Kshatriya-inclined Brahmanas to organize the Sankirtan party. And a little man down there, like, you know, with his head, with his face, asking the question, is that true? This is where I think we're going to get some controversy, some discussion. Yeah, because part of the problem is nobody wants to be a second-class person. Okay, I'm a temple president, that means I'm an administrator, I'm not first class. So that's part of, I think, the natural thing. And it has, something has to be clarified. Our education has to be there about that principle, the confusion. So therefore, the GBC College is for it. GBC secretaries, zonal duty officers, zonal supervisors, temple presidents, Sankirtan leaders. On the right, we got a picture of three people. What is their Varna Ashram relation? People on the right there. What is their ashram relationships? Brahmachari and Grihastha.
Yeah,
and Grihastha. Right. Okay. Now, what is their relationship with Varnas? Sandipani Muni's Varna is?
Oh, Brahmana.
Brahmana.
And Krishna Balaram's Varna is?
Mixed Kshatriya and Vaishya.
Yeah, but they're not Vaishya. They were just hidden there. They were,
okay, Kshatriya.
Yeah. Yeah. So there we see. This is the situation. You know, that the Kshatriyas, they go, they learn. And even, you know, you can, if you're a Kshatriya, you can be God. You haven't got to think it's an inferior thing just because you're taking the education in this form. Okay, now here's discussion at this point. If people don't agree upon it. This first one's from the light of the Bhagavad. The wind carries the clouds to different parts of the globe, and the clouds distribute rains to the satisfaction of the people in general. Just as rich kings and merchants distribute their accumulated wealth inspired by religious priests. So here it is. The religious priests, the brahmanas, are supposed to inspire people, you know, vaishyas, you know, economic and mercantile people, and organizers, kshatriyas, to organize programs for the mass of people in general. And the Purport Prabhupada says, it is suggested herewith that the men of the intelligent class should not themselves become kshatriyas and vaishyas. Rather, the brahmanas should simply guide them in spiritual cultivation, just as the wind carries the clouds to other places to pour water. The wind itself does not take up the responsibility of pouring water. And Prabhupada kind of emphasizes that in the purport. Yeah. So yeah, there are going to be some people who materially are inclined to, you know, hearing and chanting, reading the scriptures, teaching the scriptures, engaging in deity worship, engaging others, you know, organizing festivals, and other people who are expert in battle, who are good at organizing them and everything else, you know. And that's just the external arrangement. And if we appreciate that and appreciate our position, then we can advance in pure devotional service. Then I have Sringi. Shomaka Rishi tells him, your intelligence is immature, and therefore you have no knowledge that the king, who is the best amongst human beings, is as good as the personality of Godhead. He is never to be placed on an equal footing with common men. The citizens of the state live in prosperity, being protected by his unsurpassable prowess. My dear Lord, dear boy, the lorry who carries the wheel of the chariot is represented by the monarchical regime. And therefore, and when this regime is abolished, the whole world becomes filled with thieves, who then at once vanquish the unprotected subjects like scattered lambs. You know, we can go through and change the word king for GBC. That's, you know, how it sounds. And I guess we call it by thieves and rascals. I guess you could put it in Riffix or something. Put it in modern language and increase a little interest here. But there it is. And someplace else, he says, you don't understand. We can only act our job as brahmanas because we're sheltered by Maharaj Pariksit. So he's actually greater than we are. Finally, in the translation, in the meantime, only a muhurta of the Dwadasi day was left on which to break the fast. Consequently, it was imperative that the fast be broken immediately. In this dangerous situation, Maharaj Ambarish consulted learned brahmanas. Okay, purport. When Ambarish, in this dilemma, consulted brahmanas about whether he should break the fast or wait for Durvasa Muni, apparently they could not give a definite answer about what to do. A Vaishnava, however, is the most intelligent personality. Therefore, Ambarish himself decided in the presence of the brahmanas, he would drink a little water. So a little bit of subtle point, you know. It's like the brahmanas in your community. They're usually nice guys, intelligent, you know, but they couldn't quite figure out what to do in terms of some situation like that. So then the temple president says, well look, Prabhu, it seems to me like this and that. And they go, yeah, you got it. That's right. That's it. So in the presence of the brahmanas' presence, then he expressed his higher intelligence. So that without distorting or damaging the Varnashram perspective, you know, then we as devotees, you know, we can accomplish things which go beyond that. Okay, I finish off then on this thing. It's about a 2-hour presentation. Chapter 2, then some resources for actually teaching, you know, Kshatriyas, Kshatriya inclined Brahmanas. Kushi Gadol, and Prabhupada says, to teach political science, we shall use the instructions of Maharaj Prithu. Letter to Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, setting up a university in Berkeley. We showed you, and so they haven't even started that, even considered it, I think. So I think it's very essential that we include this, you know, in the Maharaj Prithu. DDAD. So what do we have for teaching Varnashram Dharma? Of course, we have all the Prabhupada's purports, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and everything else is full of so much perspective instruction, and take a long time to go through and mine it and organize it. Then there are specific letters, and what they've done, they've taken all the different comments, or a lot of comments on management, managing yourself, managing others, managing an institution, and put it into one volume. And it's pretty good size, but to my perspective, it needs a lot of work in terms of organizing it. And there's nothing I've seen in terms of taking out of Prabhupada's books. Because the letters many times, there's actually specifically a letter to Brahmananda where Prabhupada says, don't circulate my letter. As I tell you. Then we also have Dharma Shastras. Prabhupada recommends Parasara and Manu, and he even quotes them sometimes. Bhishandesh's instructions to Yudhisthira and the Shanti Parva. It's maybe like 135 pages. So much detail. Then the Hitopadesh, the Panchatantra, and Chanaka Rajaniti. So right away we have so many resources we can get to work on. But maybe we can't pull everything out of them right away. So there are contemporary things, and I was coming up with 3 books, and maybe somebody else could come up with some. The first book I came up was with How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. Published 1936, over 30 million copies have been sold worldwide. Now there's a book distribution for you, making it one of the best-selling books of all time. In 2011, it was numbered 19 on Time Magazine's list of the 100 most influential books. Okay, so everybody should read it. It's amazing how much you can match it up with our philosophy and our culture. We have the same ideas. Next one I had was The Purpose-Driven Church by Rick Warren, subtitled Growth Without Compromising Your Message and Mission. And Vaisheshika recommended this. He actually was pushing me to read it. A lot of other people have read it. And it is. It's great. It's wonderful reading. If you have any kind of little bit of passion in your character at all, it'll be just so much like good advice and perspective on church management and everything else. And one of the very first things he says is that is that, you know, it's all totally individual. You can look at what we did and take some advantages, but you gotta you know, do your own, hoe your own row, and this takes advantages of it. So he started the Saddleback Church in Lake Forest, California. It's been translated into 30 languages, including Spanish, Portuguese, French, and German. So we can, I think everybody should get a copy when they come to this symposium. Maybe even make it a part of their regular reading, because it's easy to read, and there's just so many incredible, you know, perspectives and ideas which can all be applied in our situation. It was derived from Rick Warren's own experience in leading Saddleback Church from his founding with 12 people in 1980 to over 10,000 in his first 15 years. That's pretty good temple growth. And he spun off 30 more churches. Okay, so this book sounds like a winner. In May 2005, Survey of American Pastors and Ministers, it was voted as the second most influential book in their lives and ministries. The Purpose-Driven Church, behind A Purpose-Driven Church, a book by Rick Warren. It's a very, very interesting contrast. You can see a lot of our principles, our fundamental ideas and philosophy. By seeing the contrast, you can see, like, you know, where we have something to learn from him and where he has something to learn from us. And I finished off with the last one then, with From Good to Great. I don't know how many of people know about this book. Why some companies make the leap and others don't. One of my good disciples, Srinivas, he worked for Micron, and he was in their management track. He said they were using this book, and so many of the ideas that I had come up with after all these years, he said were exactly the same thing this guy was presenting, you know. The book is cited by several members of the Wall Street Journal's CEO Council as the best management book they ever read. Bestseller. Selling 4 million copies and going far beyond the traditional audience of business books. You know, Collins used a large research team studying 6,000 articles, generated 2,000 pages of interview transcripts, and created 3,384 megabytes of data in 5 years. You know, and his organization, his thing was, he was looking for those organizations that just, you know, some of them from mediocre or even failing, to become like market leaders and everything else. You know? He was from Stanford University, big team. He said he did not want his people coming back and saying, "Oh, it was one charismatic guy, and nobody can reproduce what he did." And he just didn't want to hear that. He was looking for, you know, principles and stuff that could be duplicated. But he said it came back, and finally, just had to accept it, that in all the companies they found, there was somebody who, in the beginning, was the person who had the vision, the attitude, the perspective. But there was an extreme difference. Some people, they made companies big, and they wanted it to be known that they were the person that made that company. And they even directly wanted, if they were taken out or they left, that the company would collapse. It was directly their attitude. But he quoted one of the people he was dealing with who were, like, you know, started these big changes, healthy changes. And the guy said, my whole vision, again and again, was that I'll work for this company sometime and we'll do great things. Then I'll retire and I'll be sitting on my front porch watching the, you know, the traffic go by on the road in the country and in my rocking chair, reading a newspaper, and I'll read about this company. And I'll be able to say to myself, I used to work for that company. So very, very good attitude of some person behind it. The second thing was, who's on the bus, who's not on the bus. We're going to go someplace. That's the main thing. Now, the destination, we're not worrying about so much to start off with. We've got a general idea. But the main thing is team building and also getting people off the team. So who am I? Who are we? Then after that, they set their goals and everything else, and there's a lot of details on that, you know. So what I had is really good resources for us. And finishing off, here's my last slide. And I figure this is going to be the graduation exercise of all the people from the GBC colleagues. They have to take eight dogs within 3 days. Within 3 days, they got at the clap of a hand, they have to get them up there and do this trick. If you can do that, you can manage the Hare Krishna temple. Okay, thank you all very much for allowing me to show you what my moonbeams from a larger lunacy. Moonbeams from a larger lunacy. Yeah. Any comments from the institution?
What about a criticism?
Oh yeah, everything. I'm working on this thing. That's why I'm showing it to people, because I want to get it together and stuff. Yeah, yeah.
I used to belong to multi-level marketing group for several years, actually. Tried and tried. Failure. Yeah. But I found that reading management books, for me anyway, I was contaminating.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. That's what I found. Of course, you mentioned the one about the purposeful driven church. That's okay. That's interesting to read. But as soon as I hear Dale Carnegie, which I read, How to Win Friends and Influence People, and then Good to Great, I didn't read, but I know it's a very, very famous thing. Maybe it's just a matter of maturity. Maybe that's...
Getting contaminated by materialism?
Instead of a spiritual perspective, thinking we can manipulate things by some material formula.
This is very interesting, okay. Because what I've seen so far in terms of the GBC, Sannyasi Guru Sangha, other things like that, they're relying heavily upon outside management theories, you know, which working in this and that and stuff. And it's exactly what you're saying. And I think we have everything in Prabhupada's books. You know? And so it's a matter even better. But the point is that if people are motivated, if they're going that way, they can pull a lot out of it. That's why I give a list of resources first from our literature. But I accept that right now there's nothing wrong and taking some of these systems that can be, you know, dovetailed. And so if you've got a perspective, you can see how it's the same thing we're talking about. But they're going into practical details and stuff, and they're talking about different corporations. For example, like one of Dale Carnegie's things I remember was like glorify the good qualities of people. That was one of his things. I think he called it don't knock over the beehive or something. And he said don't flatter people, but actually look for their good qualities and point them out. So this course goes, you know, amani na manadena. It's precisely that, expecting no respect for myself and giving all respect to others and stuff. So it's right there, you know. So that's one point, that it's already going on, and so I was trying to, like, look for some books that I thought would be any better than the books they're using in some cases, and then simultaneously things that could be very much connected into Krishna consciousness and so on. So that's, you know, kind of perspective on it. Yeah. But of course, Vishnudeva's instructions are the greatest description, you know, greatest advice of the king we can get. But it's 135 pages, and it's going to take, I know, Prabhupada extracts out just like enough for one purport. But if you can go through and then it, it's like the master's thesis just to start going through it and organizing the information and everything else. But just Vishnudeva's instructions to you, just so that.
Maybe that was an unfair criticism, just because I've had bad experience how it affected me.
Yeah.
You know, it's just jaded.
Make you stupid. Yeah.
Maharaj, it seems like a good part or something is kind of the downside of bureaucracy. It seems like that's kind of a crucial. I mean, there's leadership, but then if there's a hierarchy, it seems there can become very bureaucratic. And in the letter to Karandar, Prabhupada, you can have
Niyama
good
agraha,
intention.
No?
What?
Niyama agraha, huh? Niyama agraha, one of the six enemies. Yeah. But simultaneously, the other side is that it's a continuous battle between Nityananda and Advaita, or between the Sahajiyas and the Smartas. The Sahajiyas. Oh, Prabhu, Chan Hare Krishna. And the smartest on the other side, every single person's got to have like every single thing tied down. Or even like conflict between New York and San Francisco. California, everybody's king, and in New York, you got a tremendous hierarchy, you know, on the East Coast. Yeah, yeah. But my nature is more of a dude. I seen it. Once you understand this, too, I think helps a tremendous amount. I have one devotee whose name I won't mention, who was a big leader. He's you know, his disciple like that, and so on. But he's tremendous, like rules and regulations guy. Everybody's got it, you know. When he's managing, he doesn't have to have a supreme position, but he has to have his position and like this and that. And so I run around like telling everybody, do what you want to do, be happy. And he runs around trying to tie everybody up and so forth and so on. So whenever we've done something together, it's just been a chaos. You know, we both appreciate it. It's just we do not engage in administration together. we work from a distance, and then we get along really well. We get the job done. Yeah. It's incredible. It's just Raja Dharma, Raja Nidhi, Dandaveda, is just as big as anything else. You know, it's a big science, and so, you know, find your position and get your job. Yeah. Wow, you know, Sri Dharma. It's a whole thing to learn, you know, to be a lady. You know, my goodness, you know, it's incredible. Yeah.
Anything else?
Thank everybody. We'll go out and try and manage the six dogs in our front yard. Get all. Oh, do the business in one place or something. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, thank you all very much, and I hope your yoga is successful, and I hope you have a happy new year.
Thank you, Maharaj. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna.
Adios.